thank you for inviting me, and I hope that I'm not going to waste your time. But the topic I was given was earning a kosher living. And we start with the concept of what it means to earn a living altogether. People speak about making a living. It says that Yosef was punished that he had to spend an extra 2 years in prison because he told the Sar HaMashkim to remember him to Paro. And seemingly he should have relied on God and not have to rely on human beings. That's seemingly. And therefore, because he said to the Sar HaMashkim to remember him, and he said it twice, Zechartani v'hizkartani, so he's punished with 2 years. Very difficult. First of all, he could have been punished for 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years. Second of all, what did he do wrong? Right? The person has to make his ishtatlus. He has to put his effort in. God will bless you with whatever you do, but you can't just sit home and say, you know, I'll do nothing and the Rabbanim will take care. It doesn't work like that. So he had to make his ishtatlus. He's in prison. What should he have done? He has an opportunity now to get out by telling the Sar HaMashkim, what did he do wrong? So some say that he did too much. He should have just said, remember me, and he didn't have to tell him to remember him to Paro. So then he should have been punished with 1 year. Because the first one was okay.
The mistake was that he trusted a politician.
I hear. And secondly, if I want to teach Yosef a lesson, I don't need you to make an effort and remember, recycled, and speak to the Sar HaMashkim. I can get you out of prison without the Sar HaMashkim. Then God didn't teach a lesson so good. Because how did he get out in the end? The Sar HaMashkim remembered the Paro. So what was the lesson over here? Right? Did it really undermine the whole lesson, the fact that in the end he got out with the Sar HaMashkim? So you need to explain it in the following way. The Michtam Eliyahu says that even though we have to put effort into this world in earning a living and in everything else when it comes to medicine, healing sicknesses or whatever, you can't rely on the Rabban Shalom. The Rabban Shalom wants you to do it in a natural way. God doesn't show people miracles because then our free choice would be hampered, because if ever you saw miracles all the time, you'd have no choice. So the Rabban Shalom wants it to happen in a natural way. He wants you to put in the effort. But you should never think that it's a cause and effect, that you create the result. You fulfill a prerequisite, a condition. And God then does his part. But it's not that you cause the result. Yosef's mistake was the following. He told the Sar HaMashkim to remember him. That he put in his effort, and that was enough. And then he said, and he orchestrated how he's going to remember him, right? And I want you to remember me to Paro, right? So Yosef gave the impression that not only was he putting in effort, but he was orchestrating the results, right? I'm telling you what to do and how to do it, and that will create the result. That was his mistake. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara says that a person can remember something to act upon it for 12 months, for 1 year. After that, you file it away in the back of your mind, and it becomes old business. Okay, you can remember something for years, but it's not fresh in your mind. You're not acting upon it. What? Right. Exactly. That's why the Chasam Sofer says that in a leap year. Right, it's a good idea to remember Amalek in Parshas Kisetse because it's more than 12 months. So, according to nature, right, how long could the Sar HaMashkim have remembered Yosef to do something about it? 12 months, 1 year. If at the last day of those 12 months he told Paro, how long could Paro remember to do something about it? Another year. After 2 years, it didn't come from Yosef. That was God's thing. I'm going to make it happen exactly as you thought. You're going to get out of prison with the Sar HaMashkim. but it's going to happen 2 years later where it couldn't have been that you're the cause. That's the lesson. So when a person earns a living, he earns a living, he doesn't create the living. The Rabban Hashem creates it. And in fact, the famous Gemara, the Gemara says that Yirmiyahu Novi, when the Jews didn't know they could learn Torah, they didn't have time to come to a shir, right? Even on Sunday morning, because they were too busy earning a living. And so Yirmiyahu took out the Tzinsenes Hamon, right? They put a canister of mon away in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he showed the Jewish people that they survived on mon in the Midbar, so you could also learn Torah and not be so concerned with your parnas. It always bothered me. What did Yirmiyahu, what was he telling them? That God's going to send them mon? It happened once in history. It wasn't going to happen again. What was this? What was the lesson? Right? God takes care, fine, but that was in the Midbar. Now you have to earn a living. So what did the Tzinsenes Hamon, what did it tell them? Right? God's not going to send you mon. I think the lesson was just the opposite. Okay. And that is the following. How long did the mon last every day that it fell? Just that day. If they tried to save it, it got wormy and turned sour, and they couldn't save it till the next day. Moshe Rabbeinu put away its Tzinsenes Hamon. It lasted for hundreds of years. How could that be? So there's two possibilities. One is that it was a miracle that it lasted for so much time, but it doesn't say it was a miracle. Right? Or the opposite. Really, the mon in its nature could last forever. The fact that it rotted every day was a special miracle. Why? Because God wanted to show them that he's the one who gives them parnasa. They shouldn't feel that they are the... That was the lesson of the mon. Every day in the Midbar, they needed mon every single day. Why? Not because that was the nature of things, because God wanted them to feel dependent on him. So there, and the proof is, the mon lasted hundreds of years otherwise. So it's not in the nature of the mon to disintegrate, right? To go bad. The nature of the mon was to last a long time. But God wanted them to feel his dependence on them, which explains the following. The Nochash, let's start with something before that. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people that before they came to Eretz Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael is not like the land of Egypt. You should realize you're familiar with the land of Egypt. In Egypt, you always had a readily available water supply. The Nile overflowed, and they used that for irrigation, for drinking water. It was never a shortage of water. But the land I'm bringing you to depends totally on rainfall. And it doesn't always rain. Right? This year, Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, was a year of brachas, tremendous amount of rain. But last year and the year before that, there were droughts. So it's not a land where you have a guaranteed water supply. Now, I don't know if I would have heard that, I would have turned back and go back to Mitzrayim. What is God trying to do? Discourage us from going to Eretz Yisrael? Same question you can ask on the following. It says that the snake, the original snake, was cursed with many curses. One of them was, V'ofer tochal kol yemei chayecha. You'll eat dust your entire life. So one opinion says that it means that the snake has no taste buds, and everything tastes like dust. That's a curse. There's another opinion. The other opinion says that what it means is wherever the snake is, its food supply will be readily available to it. I don't know, that doesn't sound like a curse. I wouldn't mind, a curse like that. Wherever you are, you open the refrigerator, you don't have to go shopping, and your food supply is readily available, just like the dust of the earth. And in contrast to that, in the desert, they had one day's food supply, and if they tried to save it, they couldn't. Every morning, there was nothing, the cupboards were bare, and the they had to depend on a new food supply of the month. That was considered a blessing. Doesn't make sense. I never understood this until the following true story happened years ago in Miami. I had one of my balabatim was a teacher in the local public high school. And in Miami at the time, she taught Hebrew. Hebrew was a recognized, accepted second language in the public high schools. Now the recognized second language in Miami is English. In any case, it was Hebrew at the time. She called me one day, and she said that she had a student, a Jewish student, 17-year-old boy, who has tried to commit suicide twice already, unsuccessfully. And all the guidance counselors and teachers and principal have tried to dissuade him from trying again, and they feel that they haven't been successful, and he's going to try to commit suicide again. So do I want to try maybe to save this Jewish boy's life and maybe have some impression and try to give him some reason to live? So I said, fine, bring him in. And the boy walked there. I never saw a sadder-looking individual in my life. So I said to him, you know, you're 17 years old. What could have happened in your short 17 years of life that makes you so depressed that wants you to make you take your life? He said, Rabbi, I'll tell you. He said, I've grown up with my father. I don't even know who my mother is. She abandoned me when I was an infant. My father is a very, very wealthy man, and he's all I have in this world. And I have surmised from things that have happened that my father met a woman that he wants to marry, and the woman made a condition that she will marry him only if I'm out of the picture. If I'm out of the picture. She doesn't want a 17-year-old cramping her style. So my father called me in a few weeks ago, and he took out of his pocket a set of keys. And he said, I bought you a very, very elegant condominium in a very yuppie neighborhood in Miami, fully furnished, fully paid for. It's yours. Here's the keys to your apartment. Then he took out a set of keys from his other pocket, and he said, look, you need transportation. I bought you a very fancy sports car, all paid for. It's yours. Enjoy it. Gives me the keys to the sports car. Then from his wallet, he took out a credit card. He said, the credit card's on my name. You need food, clothing, entertainment. Within reason, I can afford it. Please, use the credit card. Put everything on my bill. Just one thing. It's been nice knowing you. Have a good life. Don't visit me. Don't call me. Right? Nice knowing you. You're on your own. Shook my hand, and that was it. I was much younger at the time, and I thought to myself, if I was 17 years old, had my own apartment, my own sports car, and an unlimited credit, I don't think I'd be suicidal. Right? I felt like telling this young man, I said, listen, you know, everybody in this world has their package of tzaras, okay? You have yours, I have mine. Let's trade. You give me your apartment, your sports car, and your credit card. I'll give you my tzaras. Right? If that's your tzaras, right, I'm willing to trade. And then I realized that every time that young boy used the car, lived in the apartment, and used that credit card, it reminded him that nobody wants him, that nobody loves him. That's a curse. That was the curse of the snake. The Rabbanu Shem said there have to be snakes in this world, but I don't want to have anything to do with you. So I'm giving you your food supply till the end of time. Don't have anything to do with me. That's a curse. That's a curse. If you want to know the end of the story, I looked into this boy's background, and I found out he was adopted. That's why the mother abandoned him. She decided that she made a mistake in adopting him. And he wasn't Jewish. He was Catholic. Never was converted or whatever, and surely not kosher. So I called the Catholic services in Miami, and I told them the story. I said, you have to find this boy a foster home. So get some love. So they did. And before I left Miami, about 2 years later, I checked up on him. And he was very, very happy with his foster parents. He still had his car, his apartment, and his credit card. So he had the best of both. He wasn't committing suicide anymore. But that's a curse. It's a curse. You could have everything. The Nachash had a readily available food supply, but he had no connection to God. The Jewish people in the desert, the same thing. The Rabbanu Shem said, I'm not going to give you more than one day's food supply. I want you to know that your sustenance comes from me, that I care about you. And that's at Eretz Yisrael. You may not have a lot of water. In Egypt, God put the water supply on a Shabbos clock. The Nile, what's it called, overflows. You have water. But you have no connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's Parnassah too. earning a living does not depend cause and effect on the effort you put in. You have to put in the effort, but in the end, whether you earn a living or not is something that clearly tells you that God's in charge. Clear. It says, Koshim is onosef shalodim kikriyas yamsuf. And it's normally explained or translated that a person's sustenance, his earning a living, is as hard, as difficult as the splitting of the Red Sea, which opens a Pandora's box of questions, because who was the splitting of the Red Sea difficult for? It wasn't difficult for God. Was it difficult for the Jewish people? Difficult for the Egyptians? So there's all, I know, about 15 different explanations of what it means. Right? One is that sometimes people, it was difficult for the Egyptians. Why? Because they saw the sea open for the Jews. They figured if it opened for them, it's going to open for us too. People see, this guy made it in this profession or this deal, I'm going to do the same thing. And he's miserably a failure. Just because it worked for this one doesn't mean it's going to work for this one. Right? Others say it was difficult for God because it says they were idol worshippers and these were idol worshippers. And God still did it even though they didn't deserve it. All different explanations. What was difficult about the splitting of the Red Sea that's difficult in earning a living? But I don't think it means that. The word kasher can mean two things. It can mean difficult. It can mean hard. Right? Kosher kabarzel means not difficult like iron, but strong like iron. There are two ways of seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam. One was the splitting of the Red Sea. People were obvious that there's a God in this world. But there's something just as strong, a lesson, right? That there's a God in the world is earning a living. The person opens his eyes, he realizes that most of the time what you think is you're going to benefit from is not what you get benefit from, and it comes from a completely unheard of way. And sometimes people put in all the right effort and they don't make a living. And some people put in what seems to be ridiculous and they make they strike it rich. Example, on both sides, when the Iron Curtain was opened, many Russians came to America or to Israel, and they had every degree that you can imagine, engineers, doctors, they put in all the right effort, got the right degrees, but they came to countries where there was a glut of physicians or a glut of engineers, and they made it difficult for them to get jobs, and most of them ended up cleaning the offices of doctors and scrounging around in garbage cans for their meals. So they had all the right, did all the right effort, and nothing came from it. And then there's the opposite case. Somebody would come to you and ask you to invest in the following endeavor. This was 20, 30 years ago, Pet Rocks. He had this great idea. He's going to take a regular rock, go out in the street, right, put it in a box, right, print the boxes like cages, so it looks like it's in a cage. Print up a sheet of instructions of how to take care of the rock. Very easy pet, doesn't eat, doesn't need to be taken for a walk. A very easy pet to have, and it has a name. Every rock had a name, your pet rock. Now, who in the world is going to buy a rock when they can go out and get a whole zoo full of them for free? Just walk outside. You want a sheet? Print up your own sheet. Put it in a cage, real cage, to buy. He sold it for $10. And Americans are Americans, and it became a fad. And people bought it up like hotcakes, and became a millionaire overnight. Okay. Makes sense? No. But the revolution wanted that person to be rich. He gave him this crazy idea. Nobody would have invested in it, and he became rich. Another thing was Cabbage Patch dolls, all around the same time. They were dolls that were so ugly that a mother couldn't love them. Who in the world is going to buy their daughter an ugly doll? But Americans are Americans. And it became a fad. Everybody had to have a Cabbage Patch doll. So from earning a living is most of the time very obvious to the person himself that with all the effort he puts in, many times he realizes there's a God in this world. For the good, for the bad, right, he knows that the results are not his. The results come from heaven. So it's as strong as the lesson of Kriyas Yamsuf, for the splitting of the Red Sea, That lesson of that there's a God in the world and that you have a connection to him is just as strong from earning a living. So that's the case, that a person earning a living is not creating a living, but it's earning the right, fulfilling the prerequisite for God to do it. I want to read you a Pele Yoetz, Rabbi Lezer Papa. He writes like this. He says, V'yu kol ma'aseh l'shem shamayim, v'ko yomer b'fem moleh b'chol yom. Person, before he goes to work every day, should say the following. Hareini holech l'sasek b'maso matan. I'm going to deal in my profession, my occupation, my business. U'bitchoni b'Hashem, but I trust that God is the one who in the end is going to either bless my efforts with success or not. He's going to give me the ability to be sustained, myself and my family, in an honorable way. He'll give me the ability to use my money for tzedakah and for gemilas chasodim. And he'll give me the opportunity also to fulfill mitzvahs and to learn Torah because I earn a living. And he begs for God's doing kindness with him and crowning his efforts of earning a living with success. And then he says the following. If you really believe that it's not your efforts that make the result, but you are filling a prerequisite, and God is the one who bestows your living on you, then somebody who thinks that you're going to become rich by stealing, by cheating, right, by lying, by asogis gvul, by undercutting other people, ukehena yisurim rabbit, all of the prohibitions that apply to the business world, hamisragshim b'masu matan, v'over aleihem, and he transgresses them. And he also earns his living at the expense of his spiritual life. He doesn't daven with a minyan. He doesn't learn any Torah. He doesn't do mitzvahs because he's too busy earning a living. He doesn't come to daven mincha because he's too busy. If you really believe that God is the one who bestows the parnasa, how in the world could you think that God is going to give you a parnasa if this is the way that you think that you're putting in the effort to get it? You'll never see a blessing from this kind of effort. This is a negative effort, not positive effort. And even if he sees success temporarily, even if a person sees short-term success, but a person who earns his living in a negative way, in the end, he's going to lose the living, or he's going to lose the living altogether. The money's not going to mean anything to him. He's not going to be here. The osher shomer lebayil of the roi, the wealth itself will be a negative effect on the person. So if a person really believes that his living comes from God, and he's able to see from the way that the Rabbanu Shlom deals with him, that you need to come on to heavenly assistance. No earning of a living ever goes that smoothly. Only for the Nochash it went smoothly. But for the Jewish people in the desert, and for what's it called in Eretz Yisrael, things are difficult. And they don't have to be very difficult, they just have to be that you see that you're not in control. If you understand that, then you'll put in the kind of effort that the Rebbe Elder Shalom will be happy with, and that's the kind of effort that you can get that bracha from. I just found... A list of things that a person can do that will be positive for earning a living. The most positive thing is to get a good job that makes sense and put in effort. But these things are skulas. They're the icing on the cake. You have the cake, and you believe that you're putting in the effort and God is going to give you that kind of success, then these things add. One thing is to say the animamim every day after davening. It's in the Siddurim, the 13 principles of faith, and if you have faith in the Rebbe Shalom, then he'll have faith in you. Another thing is for a person to get up before he goes to work and learn a little Torah. Right? You have a shir, you have a daf yomi shir, whatever, it doesn't have to be that, 15 minutes. Before, come to daven a little bit earlier and put some time into learning Torah. So God sees that you want that time, he'll give you time by making it easier to earn a living. Daven with a minion, because davening, right, is something that for sure is something you need to guarantee a living. Right? You have to pray to the Rebbe Shalom. If you do with a minion, you're not only dependent on your own merit, you have the merit of the whole tzibur, of the whole community. Another thing is to bench from a bencher and out loud. Okay, so you hear what you're saying. The reason for that, I think, is you have to understand what benching is. Benching is not just thanking God for the food. Because if that would be, then benching should be, God, the food was great, thank you, see you next meal. The benching is a lot longer than that. The first bracha is basically that. God sustains the world. After that, you have to mention Torah and Bris and the Eretz Yisrael and Malchus Beis David and the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, why do you have to go and refresh your course in Jewish history because you ate a sandwich? What in the world is the connection? I think the idea is that eating is important because it gives you energy. It extends your life. But what's life all about? If life isn't important, then eating can't be too important. If life is important, then eating and sustaining that life is important. So benching, you want to thank God for the food, but you want to put the food into a context where it's important. So first you have a refresher course on what the importance of life is in the eternal sense. Now eating is an important thing. If it's so important, I thank God for it. The thank you can be greater. So if you appreciate what life is and how much earning a living to live is, that's an important thing. In fact, it says that the Babylonians were foolish people because they used to eat bread sandwiches, bread with bread. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara has no interest in telling me the eating habits of the Babylonians. What does it mean? I heard once what it means is the following. If you ask a Babylonian, or for that matter, an American or Israeli or anybody else, why do you work so hard? He says, because I have to live. Why do I have to live? Because I have to go to work tomorrow. It's a vicious circle. It's bread with bread. I'm working in order to live, and I'm living in order to work. If that's the life, and that's all there is, then it becomes a vicious circle. And what happens in Miami, I was familiar with people who retired. And many of these people, after, you know, they played golf for all the time they could and watched all the reruns on television, they had no purpose to live. Their whole life was based on earning a living. And now they didn't have to earn a living anymore. They had nothing to live for. And they used to sit around on their porch in their condominiums waiting for the Malach HaMavis to come. Without, not exaggeration, but somebody who earns a living to live, but he has a purpose to live. So his purpose is not to earn a living the next day. The earning a living is a means to reach an end, but there's an end. So that's what benching also teaches me. Another thing is Motzei Shabbos, to start the week with the Yitein Lecha. You start the week, before you go back to work, you get a preface to what the purpose of work is. And when you say Ashrei, to have Kavon and Poseach Es Yodecho, to believe that God's the one who opens his hand and sustains everyone. And inviting guests into your home is another skula for parnasa. And here's a very important one. Gemara says this. Honoring and respecting your wife is a foundation for parnasa. The parnasa of a home comes through the wife. The more important and more respected the wife is, the more the magnet for sustenance. Giving tzedakah generates a living, honoring the Torah and the people who learn it, also honoring the Shabbos, right? All of these things are skulas for parnasa. But if you want to earn a kosher living, so you first have to have the right outlook of what your part in earning that living is and what God's part is. And if you understand that it's God who's the one who ultimately gives you the living, then you want to do it in a way that's going to make him happy and not the way that he's going to feel that your efforts are counterproductive. And if you do all of that, plus these extra icing on the cake, then everybody will be blessed with a fine sustenance and be able to devote their time to the more important things of what the purpose of life is. And obviously you people who come a Sunday morning early like this, right, are not, you know, taking advantage of the Shabbos Sheni Shel Golios, you know, that exists here, the Sunday day of rest, right? You come to learn. That's a tremendous thing. So obviously you already are on the right page and the right wavelength. You're not the ones who really needed me to come here and speak this. But if you understand that, so you'll tell it to the other ones who aren't here, and the word of Mirza Hashem will get out.
Oh man, Yishikoach. Before everyone steps out, I want to thank Rabbi Leff, who was able to be here, first of all, because of Hashem, but the Hishtadlis by B'Lev Echad, the organization that made this happen, to bring Rabbi Leff here to Los Angeles for Shabbos. Those who have seen the website, kirov.org, that's their website. It's very successful outreach for teenagers, for youth. They work with a lot of kibbutzim, over 30 kibbutzim, from what I understand, over 30 kibbutzim around Beit Shemesh and the surrounding area. To bring them inspiring Torah, much like that which we've heard today, into their lives. So whatever support can be given would be great. Thank you.
I have envelopes and or whatever. When I can come see some people at home, it would be very, very inspiring for them.
Thank you. Shkoyach.
Shkoyach.